Welcome to the Bigger Pockets Money Podcast, show number 231, where we interview Tien and Brandon Rooney and talk about van life and rental properties.
So they put all their money into real estate and they just kind of learned along the way. And so they ended up working for 5 extra years, but still retiring at 45. And they told us that story and we were like, we can do that.
Hello, hello, hello. My name is Mindy Jensen. And with me, as always, is my always quick with the joke co-host, Scott Trench.
Thanks, Mindy. We'll showcase that later with some Gouda cheese jokes at the end.
That was terrible.
Oh, come on. All right.
That was horrible. Scott and I are here to make financial independence less scary, less for just for somebody else, to make really bad jokes, and to introduce you to every money story, because we truly do believe that financial freedom is attainable for everyone, no matter when or where you're starting.
That's right. Whether you want to retire early and travel the world in a van, go on to make big-time investments in assets like real estate, or start your own business, we'll help you reach your financial goals and get money out of the way so you can launch yourself towards those dreams.
Scott, I really, really am excited about this episode today. Tien and Brandon are a young couple from Southern California who have traveled the world, traveled the U.S. in their van, and now have a property in a series of rental properties, including one that they use as Airbnb from their home base of Southern California.
Yeah, I think what I observed about this couple, by the way, shout out to my mom, Mrs. Trench, that's Mrs. Trench to all of you, for introducing us to Tien and Brandon today. So thank you, Mom. We appreciate more references there. But anyways, what I think I observed about this couple is that they're flexible, right? And because they're flexible and creative and willing to experiment, they've never put themselves in a position where I think the demands of their job or their lifestyle require them to lock down for a long period of time. And they've exploited that advantage, I think, multiple times over the years with this. You know, whether that's spending 6 weeks in Indiana to do a flip, or whether it's house hacking, whether it's living in a van, whether it's living with family in the basement, you know, or whatever it is, they're willing to do it. And that, I think, has created optionality for them, not only wealth, but optionality to try a bunch of different things, become wealthy in interesting and creative ways, and I think experience probably a lifestyle that I would be envious of in some ways, and not so envious of in other ways. I guess you'll see it. I think you'll see, like, it's interesting and unique, and I think there's a lot of power behind the flexible and creative way that they've designed their lives and the opportunities that's afforded them.
Yeah. What's that phrase? Live like nobody else now so that you can live like nobody else later. They kind of embody that. That's so just their creativity, their flexibility, their just willingness to do whatever it takes, whatever they're comfortable with to further themselves down the path to financial independence. And I just think that there's a lot of lessons to be learned here for everybody listening.
I think that's right. And I'll also highlight one other point. When they were in debt, there was no comfort. There was none of, like, there was some comfort because they were living in Southern California, but they were willing to humble themselves and live with family and do what it took to pay off that debt before doing all this other creative stuff that you know, I think really drove their wealth from zero to hundreds of thousands of dollars and close to financial freedom at this point. So I think that that's right. I think there's a tremendous amount of discipline and hustle, living like no one else, in order to get into that strong financial position where all the other opportunities we discussed in the show trickle down from.
Remember when you had to pay to get a lead's phone number? It was like the dark ages, until Deal Machine made skip tracing a thing of the past. Now, with your Deal Machine plan, you'll get unlimited access to phone numbers and contact information for no extra cost. That's right, get high quality, reliable information trusted by leading financial institutions, all fully compliant with the federal Do Not Call list. Explore over 150 data points, including age, gender, marital status, occupation, and a ton more. Trust me, this is the data you need for off-market deals. With new filters, people flags, and color-coded phone numbers, lead management just got a ton easier. Ready to step up your investing game? Sign up for a Deal Machine plan today and gain immediate access to this unlimited treasure trove of contact information and phone numbers. Just head to dealmachine.com/BP. Transform your lead generation and deal-making strategies with Deal Machine. Sign up today and start exploring the unlimited possibilities at dealmachine.com/BP.
The dream of owning a vacation home can be daunting. From finding the best guests, to the maintenance, to organizing the cleaners after every guest day. With Vacasa, they make that dream into a reality. As a full-service vacation home management company with vacation homes in key destinations across the U.S., they know a thing about how to make owning a vacation home easy and profitable. On top of proactive property maintenance visits by professional local teams, a hospitality-driven booking platform, and around-the-clock support, Vacasa earns homeowners an average of 20% more revenue from their vacation homes. Vacasa is always thinking of ways to simplify the vacation home owning experience by putting your home to work for you. If you're looking to make more from your vacation home, work with the reliable property manager, and finally have peace of mind, partner with Vacasa at vacasa.com/biggerpockets. That's vacasa.com/biggerpockets.
The easiest way to collect rent? Rent App. Rent App is a seamless, secure, free payment tool for small rental property owners like you and me. Built by a team of fintech veterans behind Square and Cash App, Rent App uses ACH bank transfers to deposit rent directly into your account. Landlords love Rent App for its unbeatable convenience. Isn't it time you made rent collection easier? Rent App, the free and easy way to collect rent. Learn more at rent.app/landlord. That's rent.app/landlord. Tien and Brandon Rooney, welcome to the Bigger Pockets Money Podcast. I'm so excited to talk to you guys today.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
So let's jump right into it. Where does your journey with money begin?
So our journey with money, basically after we got out of college, I was lucky enough to not have any financial student debt, but Brandon had financial debt, and we just kind of started our W-2 jobs working, you know, regular 40-hour week type jobs. And then we kind of got the bug to travel a little bit. So through roundabout ways, we ended up moving abroad, traveling, and for 9 months. And then when we came back, we realized, well, we have all this debt we still need to pay off, and we don't have jobs, and we really need to get our finances in order. So we went really hard on the debt payoff. So we rented a room instead of getting our own place. We started looking for jobs. And then basically we just went really hard into budgeting and being super frugal. And then every month we would take, like, to the very penny how much money we had left over in our budget. And then we started by building up our 3-month emergency fund. And then after that, we just took off the end of every month, every penny that we had left over, we just put on the student loans. And then we were able to get those paid off really quickly. So we did all his student loans, about $50,000. It was student and car loan in about 8 months.
What it sounds like your journey really begins after you get back from the 9 months of travel. That's when your financial journey kind of really hits the turbocharger, I guess, here. Yeah. What were both of your jobs? What was your income? What was the total debt? What was the snapshot of the picture at that moment in time?
So at that time, we came back from, we were in Southeast Asia teaching English, making basically enough to travel. And so when we came back, we didn't have jobs. We actually started working part-time for a startup, which was awesome because it actually got us moving forward in our entrepreneurial spirit. But it paid very little out front. I want to say I was working like 20 hours out of that job. Tien started like a month later, and she was, at that time, they bumped us both up to about 40 hours a week. And we were making, prior to any bonuses, we were making about 50,000 each.
And okay. Then, and where are you living during this period?
So that was kind of where we really made our moves. I was living with my sister. So when we came back, she loves hosting people, and luckily she was down to host us. And so basically we made an agreement. We would pay for all their HOAs. They live in San Clemente, and so they had pretty high HOAs. So we paid for their HOAs, which was $400 a month. And then we just kind of cooked for them every once in a while, watched her daughter, and kind of did repay in that method as well. So we cut down our cost massively, because in Seattle we were renting a place, which was a good deal at the time, for like $1,600, but going from 1600 down to 400.
You paid off $50,000 in 8 months, making $100,000 a year and living in a very high cost of living area. Is that what I'm hearing you say?
Oh, no, not quite. Well, we were in a very high area, but we moved from Seattle after traveling to San Clemente and lived with my sister, and we just paid her HOA fees and like took care of her daughter and stuff like that.
Right. But everything else you say is
right. Yeah. Everything else you said, Mindy, was right. Yeah. We were still able to pay him off in 8 months.
Yeah. That's awesome. How old was this, right after college? You guys are just graduated, and that's kind of the age range you guys are in at this point.
So we had worked for 2 years and then traveled for 9 months. So we were about 25 at the time.
Okay. Awesome. And what was the total debt? Was it 50K? Did you get back to zero during this period?
Yeah. So I had, when I graduated, about 30,000 in debt from Iowa State. And then I bought a car once I got out to Seattle for my first job, because I had like a 1986 Bronco II that didn't make it from Iowa to Seattle. And so I ended up buying a new car, which obviously those come with a high price tag. And so I think at that time it was about, my loan was 20,000. So it came out to basically 50,000 almost on the dot in total debt. And it was all mine. Don't let Tien, she was always good.
Well, I think it's awesome. I mean, you had an opportunity here. San Clemente is like, I think, one of the most beautiful places to live in the entire world. It's right between LA and San Diego, right? I went there for a wedding a few years back and fell in love. One day I'll spend a year in San Clemente.
Stay with Brandon's sister. She loves hosting people.
She does.
Yeah, she does.
That's right. Yeah.
Just let us know.
But that's awesome. So you're living there, you're working these startup jobs, you're acquiring some skills, you're using all of your advantages to, I think, great effect here, and you pay off all your debt in 8-9 months. What happens after that?
So at that point, his sister really got us into Dave Ramsey, which it has pros and cons, but we were like really excited about paying off the debt. But then after that, Dave Ramsey doesn't have anything left. So we were just kind of lost financially. We weren't really sure what to do. So we decided to try kind of a few side hustles. So I decided to get my tax license. So I started doing personal income taxes. And then Brandon actually was pursuing firefighting at the time, which is really competitive here in Southern California. So it can take years to get on. So he was taking an academy at the time. And then I was working the second job as a tax preparer, which didn't necessarily pay as much as I was expecting, but we learned so much knowledge and information that we've been able to use in our business that it's really just been invaluable in that respect. And then we tried a few other things. I opened an Etsy shop and do some more like passive income for photography sales. And that just also wasn't as lucrative as we thought. So we kind of just tried a few different things to make some passive income, and then eventually landed in real estate.
What year did you pay off the debt? When is that?
We paid it off in, we came back 2015, February 2015.
That was the end of your debt paid off.
Yeah, so we started basically in the summer of 2014 and then paid it off in February of 2015.
Okay, awesome. And so in 2015, you're debt free, and you're like figuring stuff out. We have the firefighting, we have the tax preparer. It sounds like you're trying a number of different things. How long does that go on for, and how does your financial position evolve as you're trying and experimenting these things?
So probably after, so at that time we were still actually working for this startup, which was a very small company. I mean, as far as the office goes, there was about five of us, and then we had a call center and stuff. And so we got pretty heavy into that. And so we were making more money through that. I think we were up to like 70,000 each. And then as the time went on, we basically were able to get into the real estate in 2017. And I'll let Tien take that because that was kind of driven by her family.
Well, going into, okay, great. So 2017 sounds like another inflection point here. What is your financial, as 2 years go by, are you investing? Do you build up a cash cushion? How does that, what does that look like during that period?
So at that time, we were just putting money in our Roth IRAs every year. And then we were essentially just stockpiling cash. Like we were looking, I reached out to a couple of different like financial gurus, and we had talked to a bunch of other people that we knew who were kind of in the finance world. And everyone was just like, oh, we don't know what's happening with the housing market or with the economy. So, you know, like maybe cash is just the right way to do it right now. We did put a little bit of money in the stock market and we're actively trading, which we have continued to do for a few years and has been like somewhat lucrative. But it's a lot more stress. So we've leaned over the years more towards ETFs. But in the meantime, that was basically, we were just stockpiling as much cash as we could.
And how much cash are you entering 2017 in your real estate investing strategy with?
So in, let me pull up. I have all our numbers here.
So we do have a spreadsheet. Yeah. Oh, we have so many spreadsheets.
So many spreadsheets.
I just, while you're pulling that up, Brandon, I want to point out that this was what, 2015, 2016? And you were saying, ooh, we're uncertain where the market's going to go. Mm-hmm. And here we are. And I'm not like poking fun at you. I'm pointing out that we're uncertain where the market's going to go has been the mantra since what, 2014, Scott? When the market started picking up in a lot of places, ooh, it's starting to get hot. 2015, 2016, 2017, yeah. 2018. Oh, should I wait for a crash? 2019, 2020. Here, 2020 has a worldwide pandemic and the real estate market didn't crash.
Yeah. It's pretty crazy.
Well, I think it's been uncertain since 1850. but it's been...
When did mortgages start?
While you're pulling that up also, when is the hook of financial independence sinking in? Is that from Dave Ramsey, like immediately back in 2014, 2015, or are you kind of like discovering that in this period as well?
So actually that came from traveling. So when we were living in Seattle before that, we were working a ton. So I was working like 65, 70 hours a week. And then Brandon was working at a job that had a little bit more flexibility, but he was still working really hard for what he was getting paid. And so we were just like, maybe the corporate world is not as fun as we expected it to be. So that's when we just both left our jobs, decided to travel. And then we traveled for 9 months and got hooked. And we were like, we love this. Like, we love this freedom. We're not working that many hours. We're able to travel and climb and like do all the things that we love. And so we were like, we need to figure out a way to be able to do this more often.
Love it. And so that became the goal instantaneously, is to figure out how to sustain that indefinitely.
Yeah.
In that travel.
Yeah. I like to play a lot. So as long as we can get more time playing, that's a great thing for me.
And I think it was also 2016 that we also met another couple, and they had, through just frugality and investments, decided that they were going to retire at 40. And then they're older than us. So then when their retirement date came around, it was like right around 2005, 2006. So right at the right time of the housing market. They had never invested in real estate, but they obviously had a ton of cash because they were trying to retire early. So they put all their money into real estate and they just kind of learned along the way. And so they ended up working for 5 extra years, but still retiring at 45. And they told us that story and we were like, we can do that. And we can start earlier than 40. And so then we can reach financial independence earlier than 40.
All right. So let's go through your actions that you took in 2017 and your position that you were in at that point.
So in basically at the end of 2016, we had about $90,000 in cash. So basically in just like a year and a half, or a little over a year and a half, we had built up $90,000 in cash. And so in 2017, we were back in Indiana where Tien's family lives. We were visiting and they've done flips for like one or two a year. Just basically went to the sheriff's sale, found a house, would flip it really quickly, and they're successful with it. However, the sheriff's sale was kind of at that point, kind of not really a source of deals anymore. Even though we still went to one, we tried to bid on a couple, nothing panned out, but then we went on a drive with their real estate agent. And that same day we ended up putting an offer on a house to fix and flip in Indianapolis. And then because the purchase price was going to be $90,000, we basically, that was all our cash. We approached Tien's grandparents and asked them to be partners because they'd been doing the flips for years and we wanted to learn from them. So we ended up doing a 50-50 deal with them on cash and labor. And so we bought the house basically same day that we showed up in Indiana. And then I think we closed a month later. And then at that point, we went into the full fix and flip. And we were working full time as well.
So you relocated to Indiana for this, for real estate investing at this point?
We relocated during the flip and then came back.
Yeah, we still had our apartment here, but we just went and stayed there and we did work all day for 6 weeks to get it ready to go.
Yeah.
And you're still living with your family in San Clemente during this period?
At that point, so our jobs were in San Diego. So we had moved down to San Diego and were renting an apartment at that point.
Okay, great. All right. So you relocate to Indiana. What does that look like? Do you live in the flip? Do you live with family? Do you rent a place? What's that look like while you're doing this project?
Yeah. So we just actually lived with my family. Yeah.
Felt like we lived in the flip.
Yeah, we would just wake up really early and we'd work for our W-2 jobs for about 4 hours. And then we'd go and work on the flip for about 8 hours and then come back and work for our W-2 jobs again for another 4 hours at night. And then it was still the startup, so it was relatively flexible and we were still able to get all our work done and do everything we needed to do for that.
So how long did this 16-hour day situation continue for?
6 weeks.
6 weeks. And what? How much?
4 weeks for 16 hours. Then at the end, it was like a little bit more like just tic-tac-y.
Okay, great. So we're there for a month and a half. Walk us through the numbers. How does this propel your situation forward?
Yeah. So as far as that first flip that we did, we were in initially for the purchase of $90,000, and then it needed everything. We before we even got out there, we had them pave the driveway. We had them tear out some stuff. They have connections with different people to come clean out stuff. And so before we even got out there, they started. And then once we got out there, we repainted the whole thing, did all new flooring, put in a deck, new window, bathroom, kitchen, the whole thing. And we were $30,000 in upgrades. So basically 120 into the deal. And then at that point, I think our realtor was like, I think you guys could get 150 for it. I'm like, well, that was a lot of work for $15,000 a person. So we ended up being like, well, mm-hmm. we did a little comp work and we found that we could probably get like 190, 180. And so we ended up convincing our realtor to go up to 180. And then at the end of it, we ended up finding a couple people that were interested and we got a buyer to offer at the asking. And then at that point we still had all the appraisal and stuff like that. And the one thing we didn't do on the flip was the roof. And then they wanted the roof done. So actually that was included in the $30,000 upgrade. So at the end of the day, we came out with $50,000 before you take out all the fees and everything. And that was split two ways.
Okay. And so what happens next? Now you've completed this flip. You've made some money. You've proven the concept at the very least. What do you do next?
So after that flip, even though it was lucrative, we pretty much decided that we didn't want to do that again because of the super long hours. And then also we paid to be in Southern California. And so it was kind of silly to be paying rent for 6 weeks, not living here. So we decided that rentals is how we wanted to go. So we basically just got on the rental train. And then, like we were saying, Mendy, we didn't know what was going to happen with the housing market. So we just kind of like sat back and waited for a little bit, got a little bit more into stocks. And then we actually took a break. So Brandon, correct me if I'm wrong, but was that a 3-year break before we bought our next deal.
Two years. Yeah.
Yeah. So we just kind of saved up a lot and didn't act as quickly as we should have.
And I was getting hired by the fire department. So kind of took me out of commission for a good basically year.
Okay. So in 2017, how do we kind of like peg your net worth? Is it like probably in the 100 and 150 range in that ballpark?
In 2015. Sorry, 2017. Yeah, so in 2017, our net worth, we were sitting around 220.
Okay, and that's some stocks, the $90,000 in cash, the flip, you know, all the puts and takes there, kind of coming out of that, you're at 220.
Yep.
And then what happens when you, after your break? So 2 years go by, I assume you're still saving and investing to some degree passively. Where are you after that break?
About 300,000. Yeah.
Okay. And now you're saying life circumstances are right again for real estate investing. What do you do? What are the investments you make there?
Yeah. So our realtor brought us another off-market deal. So it was basically there was one person who was in a lot of tax issues. And so he was trying to sell off all his properties. So he had 30 something units to sell off, I think, that he was looking for. So,
This
is in Indiana, yes. And so we went in with a couple different people. So we had a few family members that were looking to do some flips. And our realtor actually brought in some other people that we never even knew or met. And so as a group, we collectively agreed to buy, I think, like 24 of the units for a we individually priced them, but when we made the offer was as a bulk deal. So we were purchasing four of those. It ended up, because of the IRS situation, it took about 6 months to close, and they were only closing one deal at a time or one unit at a time. So we didn't have anything else going on, but we didn't have any other deals in the pipeline. So we were fine to wait, and everyone else backed out. So they ended up honoring our deal still, which has been great. But we acquired four units, so two duplexes out of that deal.
Okay. And what did that look like, and how did that kind of accelerate your financial position there?
Yeah. So that one, we basically did conventional financing. 25% down on $190,000. So that was per duplex. So total in, we were at the $380,000. And then we had a couple of them were rented. One was vacant, and then one had a tenant that was about to move out. So we basically were setting aside money so that when people moved out, we could update them all. So we started the updating process on the one that was vacant, and then was getting those rented, and those will rent, at the time when we first got it, we were looking at about $950, $1,000 for rent. And then now it's closer to the $1,200. And those basically, yeah.
How long does it take between, offer, close, and stabilizing the units with the new higher rents?
It was about 5 months from offer to close because of the whole tax lien. And then as far as the flip it, we had two basically pretty solid tenants for a year that we didn't have to do anything for stabilizing. And then the one unit we basically did in about a month. Tien went back out and flipped that. And then as the other unit became vacant, that one was less work and only took about 2 weeks. And we had renters in it within probably 2 weeks for both of those being finished.
That's awesome. So
6 weeks probably to stabilize.
Okay, great. And so where are we now, and what comes after this?
So after this
2019.
So, this is 2019. In the meantime, we have been building out a van. And so we needed a second car because when we lived in San Diego, we worked together. We worked about a block away from our house. So we ended up going down to one car because we didn't need the second one. And then when he got on the fire department, we obviously needed a second car. He's gone for 24 hours sometimes. And we had thought about getting a van and just in the past. And so we were like, let's just get that as our second car. So we got a van, basically like the Amazon delivery vans. And then we spent about a year building it out ourselves. So into basically a camper. So by the end of our lease, at this point, we had moved up to Orange County again for a year. We were renting an apartment and then just to be a little bit closer to his work. And then we decided that we should try to live in it. And so we were going on a road trip anyway. So we were like, let's, our lease is ending. We're going on a 2-month road trip. Let's go ahead and just not rent. And then we'll just live in it as long as we can. And so we ended up living in that for a year and a half. And then in the meantime, while we're living in it, we also bought another rental.
Okay. I want to talk about this van for a while because I have seen these vans and they look super cool. But where do you shower? Where do you do all of your bathroom business?
So
because they don't have a bathroom.
So we do actually have a composting toilet in our van, which sounds pretty gross, but surprisingly is not. So basically it's a toilet that will compost the solid waste, and then the liquid waste separates, you separate it, and
you
so you dispose
to
of them total. But
so you lived, when did you move into the van?
So we moved into the van in
August 31st, 2019.
2019, yeah. So basically at the same time as Biden.
And are you still maintaining your jobs during that period living in the van?
We are, yes. So we actually still have the second car. And so we would park his car because he would need to take it to work. So we would just park it around the area. And then we would pretty much just be in the van and unless he was working. And then I worked from home already. And so I would just work from home in the van.
Why make the move? What was the rationale behind it?
So we are, we like to camp and rock climb. And so I think the van trend has been growing in the last few years. And so we're like, oh, it'd be really fun to just have a van. So if we want to go on trips and we want to go, we don't have to like pack up anything. It's just always ready to go. So we wanted to build one anyways. And then once we built it, like it has a bed and a fridge and a pantry and a closet, and it holds like our surfboards and all our climbing gear. Like it holds everything we need. We put solar on it, so we have that. So it was pretty self-sustaining anyways. And so we figured if we were going to do a 2-month road trip and not have an apartment anyways, we could just kind of extend it as long as we could.
Yeah. So the goal.
And Mindy, to answer your earlier question, we have gym memberships. And so we worked out quite a bit because whenever we need to shower, we feel guilty just like going in there to shower. So we'd go in and work out.
Yeah. Was there a bent on the financial independence thing? Was that a part of the rationale, or was it really kind of just more, that's the lifestyle that you were looking for?
I would say twofold a little bit. We were building it, and then the timing just worked out perfect. That was like, well, let's not up. Like there's no reason to pay rent. So like from a financial perspective, we're like, we're going to be gone for 2 months. We might as well not pay rent. That makes no sense. So then we're like, well, I guess we might as well not pay rent for like 6 months and just try it out. And then, so we basically like, we just set a date and we're like, oh, we'll go and see how it goes. And then it ended up being that we just like, all right, we'll just stay in it until we buy a house. We're not paying rent anymore. So that was kind of how that came about.
And we knew if we stayed in it for 6 months, it would pay for the renovations in the van. So it's kind of like, if we can last 6 months, then the renovations will have essentially been free. And then we were able to, just with all of our calculations, we saved about $30,000 in like rent, utilities, internet, all that stuff over the year and a half. So that also set us forward quite a bit.
Do you have pictures of the van that we could share in the show notes?
I do. Yes. I can send you some pictures.
I think that'd be great. Yeah. We'd love to see the inside outs, the whole deal with this thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Go ahead, Mindy.
I can hear people saying, oh, I could never live in a van. And I would also say that. So what was the hardest part about living in the van? Because clearly the easiest part of living in a van is not paying rent. That sounds super awesome. But like, where are you parking it? Does it come with electric hookups, or, you know, do you need a solar thing? I have a friend who has a Sprinter van with like the whole top is covered with like solar I don't know, maths or something?
Okay, so we did have solar as well, so we never had to hook up or anything. We're pretty much self-sustaining. So we had all our own water. We have a kitchen sink. Like, we have everything in it. So as far as where we park, so it's we're really lucky to be in, like, a great weather area. So we didn't have a heater or an AC in it. So we just, like, would open the windows. We had a fan that would circulate some air. But we all day in California, you can buy a beach pass. And so I would park at the beach every day, and it opens from 6 to 10. So I would essentially live at the beach from 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. every day. I'd work from there. Brent, we both surf, and we would just basically hang out there. And then at night, you can just park, like, in the neighborhoods, essentially. Or there's, like, areas close to the beach that you can just park, and we would just come in late and have already, like, gotten ready for bed, brushed our teeth, everything. Park there for the night and then leave again at like 6 a.m. the next morning.
Yeah, we always try to be like respectful of the neighborhoods we're in, so we wouldn't ever like park in front of somebody's house. It'd always be like across the street from a parking lot or something in the neighborhoods. And then, but yeah, I mean, as far as just kind of the difficulty of it, there is, say, if it did rain in California, which is rare, you're stuck in this like 200 square foot space with another person trying to do stuff. When the doors are open, it's great. And then you're basically, every time you're in, like going to bed, you have to be super quiet. We're just like always worried about somebody like calling the cops on us, which that never happened. I think there was only one time the cops knocked on our door, and we were luckily already awake and already ready to leave. And we were not in California even. So
that you were respectful of the neighborhoods you were in. You didn't park in front of somebody's house. Let's see, how do I say this? Van life can be looked down upon by municipalities.
Oh, yeah.
But I mean, if you're out in somebody's parking lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if you're not putting all your garbage around, like there's some RVs in my town where they park and literally everything comes out and it's just all over the ground. That doesn't look nice.
Yeah. We basically tried to make it look like we were up.
Not there.
Like, I don't know, like a commercial banner that no one was in it. Like, we try to be as quiet as possible, and we never really went in. We would basically just park somewhere to go to sleep and then wake up and drive away.
Tien's plumbing on the side of the van.
Yeah, exactly.
Pretty good episode, right? While you were listening, you could have been getting paid rent with Rent App. Landlords love Rent App because it makes rent collection a breeze. Rent App uses ACH bank transfers to deposit funds directly into your account. Setup is straightforward for renters. Landlords don't need to download anything. Both have peace of mind with a digital transaction history. Isn't it time you made landlording a little easier? Rent App, the best way to pay or collect rent. Learn more at rent.app/landlord. That's rent.app/landlord.
This show is sponsored by Airbnb. Did you know that a long time ago, before I ever started my real estate business, I turned one of my first primary residences into an Airbnb? And that's the extra income that I needed from Airbnb that gave me the confidence to go out and work for myself and eventually quit my 9-to-5 job. And now I have dozens of Airbnbs all over the country. I've even partnered up with the old David Green on a recent property in Scottsdale to take our portfolio to the next level. And of course, we host it on Airbnb. But you don't need to be a full-time real estate investor to start on Airbnb. As a matter of fact, I was self-managing 10 properties while working my 9-to-5 job, so I know anybody can do it. Think about it this way. You're looking for extra income and going on a vacation. Wouldn't it be great to rent out your space and let your property pay for itself while you're gone? I did this one time. I pitched my wife and my roommate, because we were house hacking, on the idea of renting out our home, and it paid for all of our expenses on a trip to Mexico City. So go and give it a try. It might just change your life, just like it did mine. And I really do mean that. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Real estate investing is great, but for some, the tenant phone calls and clogged toilets aren't all that attractive. So how do you invest in real estate without getting your hands dirty? Invest for truly passive income with Pine Financial Group. Pine's mortgage fund offers an 8% preferred return and an attractive profit split. with 70% of profits going to the investors. You'll earn passive income by participating in lending to house flippers. And it's secure because senior lien holders, that's you, get paid first. Their rigorous underwriting process and the backing of the physical asset provide additional security in case of borrower default. Plus, by investing with Pine Financial Group, you contribute to the revitalization of communities by redirecting your funds from Wall Street to Main Street, supporting local economies and generating profits simultaneously. This investment is reserved for accredited investors, but if you are not accredited, Pine Financial has options for you too. Don't miss this opportunity to back Main Street over Wall Street and start earning passive real estate income. Learn more about investing with Pine at pinefinancialgroup.com/BP. That's pinefinancialgroup.com/BP.
You're trying to close on your next rental, so why is your insurance company dragging its feet? With long lead times and never-ending paper forms, it's no wonder it takes forever to finally get a policy. Modern investors deserve better. They deserve Steadily.com. At Steadily.com, you'll get fast, affordable landlord insurance available online 24/7 in just a few clicks. You can even get next-day coverage, which takes just minutes, by the way, to obtain. And you can do it all from your phone. Steadily was founded by landlords who created insurance products tailored to the unique needs of this industry. It's their sole focus, and that's why landlords nationwide consistently rate them 4.8 out of 5 stars. So whether you've got a single-family, short-term, or multifamily portfolio, Steadily.com can secure the best coverage at the best price to protect your properties. Discover how Steadily can save you both time and money on your rental property insurance. Visit Steadily.com for a commitment-free quote tailored to your needs today.
So let's talk about all your stuff. What did you do with all your stuff while you moved out of your apartment and into a van?
Yeah, so we kept everything in a storage unit, and then we kept it pretty organized, and we had a couple of dressers in there. So that way, like when it, not that the weather changes all that much in Southern California, but you know, like when it got cooler, we could switch out some of our summer clothes for winter and stuff like that. But we just kept a close by storage unit. And so if we ever needed anything, we could grab it pretty easily.
And this got you, you said this got you $30,000 ahead of the game by yes. living in a van for mm-hmm. how long did you live in there? 18 months?
A year and a half.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You must have liked it to stay there for longer than the first 6 months. Is that right?
Yeah, we actually ended up really liking it. And it was for us, it was like a great way to travel. So we took a couple of like 1 to 2 month road trips. And then Brennan would just fly back and work for basically like a week straight and then fly back to me. So we got to see a lot of stuff. We spent a ton of time at the beach. We played a bunch. Like we also obviously worked hard and still kept our investing up, but we were able to play a lot. And we realize now, like, we just bought a house, which I'm sure we'll get into, but it's like, I feel like in the last 2 months, we've seen like two sunsets where in the van, like you see every beach sunset and you see all these cool places and stuff. So it's a cool lifestyle, but a year and a half is a good amount.
So what's your financial position after you kind of end the van stint here for 18 months, and what year are we in with the end of the living in the van?
So 2021, we actually just ended it in February, well, I guess March of this year.
Yeah, and where are you guys at in the financial journey?
So at that point, we actually had already, we had acquired a third duplex in Indiana as well. And so we were sitting about, our net worth in February was about 480. So we had made a pretty good jump from our investments as well as money saving from over that year and a half. And we're basically awesome. Ready to buy a house because Tien was sick of working out of a tiny van.
So what's that transition look like? Where do you buy? What happens in the last couple of months here?
Yeah, so we started looking. We were more looking in Orange County just because he works up in LA. And pricing, I'm not that San Diego is cheap by any means, but Orange County is pretty hefty price tags. So we started looking. We were trying to decide, do we want a townhome? Do we want our own house? Our dream was to have like a house with a mother-in-law so that we could house hack. And we ended up finding something. Well, we weren't even looking in San Diego. We love San Diego. We lived here for about 4 years. And then, so we have a community here and we eventually wanted to live here. But we just came down and we're having dinner with friends and something popped up on Redfin, like, oh, this house just came for sale in your area, and it was like less than 10 minutes away. So I scheduled a time with our realtor, went and looked at it, and it was a house with a mother-in-law. And so we decided to make an offer on it, and obviously went through all the normal negotiations and stuff. But they rented back for 2 weeks, and then we moved into it in March, and then basically started renovations on that. And yeah, we can get into that, I guess, if we're ready.
Yeah, that's awesome. Let's do it.
Yeah. So the back house is connected to a garage. So it's a garage, and basically they walled off half the garage, and they used it as a man cave. So it had a bathroom in it and a lazy boy and a TV. And like that was it. That was back there. But it's a pretty big space. And so we figured we could do more with it. So when we first moved in here, the day we moved in, we started ripping out the floors in the main house because they had old carpet in the bedrooms. So the first week we moved in, we basically moved our stuff into the garage, and then we're like still sleeping in the van in the driveway. And then we renovated the floors in the bedrooms and then started furnishing it. And we decided that we were going to do a short-term rental Airbnb in it. So worked on furnishing it a bunch, and then kind of started moving into the back house, but not doing any renovations. And then once the front house was ready to go, then we started renovating the back house. We painted, redid the floors, and then had some contractor come out and help us like switch out, because it already had water and electric back there. They just didn't have a kitchen, so we built a full kitchen in there. And just got that all ready and livable. So we live in the back and Airbnb the front.
And how does that look? How does that working out financially for you guys?
Yeah. So with the front house, we basically, the reason we went with short-term rentals was just the travel bug right now is insane. Everything is crazy high prices. And so we decided we'd try to at least capitalize during the summer on a San Diego visitation, because during the summer it's really busy, but it actually slows down a lot the rest of the year. So that was kind of our thought for the summer. And so yeah, during the summer it was really good. We would get about 80-90% occupancy in the front house, and we were making about $8,000 a month. And then we've already seen like a slowdown. August like was really busy the first couple of weeks. It's like already slowing down. So we're basically looking to pivot to more of a 30-day furnished finder, traveling nurses. But now that the summer's coming in, but we wanted to capitalize just on that opportunity of the summer. And next year they're changing the laws with Airbnb in San Diego. So like, oh, we might as well take it while we can. And then if we can apply and get the permit for next year, we'll probably try to do it again next summer.
And is it legally two units or is it one house?
They made it into an ADU, but it's not like addressed as two units.
Yeah, I want to point out something here that is, I think, really smart about what you guys are doing is many jurisdictions, probably where you live, have rules around Airbnb that say it can only rent out your primary residence and that at a certain percentage of the time.
Yeah.
And that's annoying to a lot of folks in your situation, but it's also an enormous competitive advantage because nobody else can do that either, right? Yeah. So the only way you can actually get a Airbnb listing in that is if you're kind of doing something like what you're doing, where it's one address and you're in that situation. And so that's an incredibly powerful tool to get started with a lot of these. I met another a couple recently that's doing that in Denver, and they're very annoyed that they can't scale the thing. And I'm like, the whole reason that you're able to get these incredible rents, $8,000 a month and that kind of stuff I would assume it would rent for less than $3,000 or around that as a traditional rental or something in that ballpark, is because of these laws.
Yeah.
And so I think that's really cool and smart of you guys.
I want to throw out there another suggestion, since you all, do you still have the van?
Yes.
Okay. So you still have the van, and now you have a legal front house. You have a legal back house. Maybe you rent out the back house during the summer as well, and just sleep in the van.
Yeah, we also talked about that.
I mean, what percentage of your mortgage is being paid over the summer with the rentals in the front house?
Oh, 100%.
100%.
Well, but not for the whole year. Is that what you're asking? Or is it?
Well, no, for the months that it's rented, it's 100%. Yeah. Is it 100 plus percent? Yes. Because then, I mean, if you could get your entire mortgage, if you can get your entire mortgage paid by living in the van for the summer, that seems like a really sweet.
We've talked about it too, like, because we're hoping to go somewhere for a month later this year. Like, oh, we'll just rent out the back while we're gone for a month. But yeah, I guess, we'll see when that comes up, if we go for it or not. We have to move all our personal stuff and stuff like that. So we'll
into the garage.
Exactly.
Or into a storage unit.
Exactly.
Get a pod.
Yeah, we actually also talked about just renting the van out since it's just sitting
people
there.
People will do that too.
Yeah.
Well, what, well, I think that's a great question. What is next for you guys now? You've got, it seems like you guys are really open to creative, awesome, you know, experiments with this kind of stuff. You're clearly able to get a really good lifestyle as a result of that in the interim and build a lot of wealth. What is your kind of end goal?
So our end goal is buy and hold. And so we want to be able, like, I guess for our long-term goal is to be able to generate $250,000 a year. And then just through our investments. And then we could essentially just live off that. But our next moves are, I actually, through Bigger Pockets, met a couple of women. And so we started a mastermind. And we've gotten really close over the last year, and I guess just over a year. And one of them we're actually going to be partnering with and doing our first BRRRR. So we're going to hopefully be doing our first BRRRR, get that completed before the end of the year. We're selling the one property that we bought during the pandemic. We're actually going to be selling that one and using those funds to do the first BRRRR. And then hopefully that's just a partnership that we can continue to leverage. So it's back in the Midwest as well. So she's in Louisville. So we're going to be essentially funding the deal and doing all of the remote admin type work. And then she has crews because she's an investor as well. So she has crews that are going to be doing the renovation, and she's got lenders and all that stuff. So we're basically bringing our talents together, and then we're going to do a deal, and then hopefully we can find a couple more single family BRRRRs over the next couple of years. And then we'd also like to get into at least one larger multi-family, like apartment building or something like that.
Awesome. And what are you guys doing for work right now?
So I work for Los Angeles County Fire Department, and just been doing that. I've over a little over 3 years. And so that comes with a lot of side benefits, but the biggest, I would say, benefit is flexibility and schedule, just being able to trade days and make my own schedule kind of, and then.
Yeah. And I work for the same, startup that we started working for. It's gone through different ownerships now, so we're definitely not in startup mode anymore, but, I work for the same company. So I'm 100% remote and, do everything online.
I just want to chime in here with regards to the partnership. I don't know you. I don't know who is doing the partnership with you. This is just general advice, not casting aspersions on anyone's character, but get everything in writing. And this is for anybody listening as well. If you are considering a real estate partnership, think of the worst case scenario. Because of course, what's the best case scenario? We make a lot of money. How are we going to handle that? But exactly how are you going to handle that? Are you going to get 40% or 50%? Or is it like a six-way partnership and each person gets whatever 100 divided by six is? Is it, you know, is the person getting more money because they coordinated the deal? Who is going to put more money in if, you know, you open up the walls and there's a huge problem? What happens if you decide that you want to keep the property and somebody else wants to sell it? Do you have first right of refusal to, you know, purchase it from them? Just all these weird things, because circumstances change over the course of a flip. And I'm in the Bigger Pockets forums every single day, and I see people talking about how their flip turned into a huge disaster, or their partnership turned into a huge disaster. And it almost always stems from, we were friends before and we, you know, I trust him, and they didn't get everything in writing. So it's just, I think it's really important to just kind of brainstorm. Like right now you're all still friends, and that's great. And the goal is to not only make money in the real estate adventure, but also to be friends at the end of it. So setting expectations up front is so, so, so important. So thank you for coming to my TED Talk.
Yeah.
And Rand.
That's a great point.
Agree. Awesome. Well, what else should we be asking you about or covering for your story before we move on to the Famous Four?
Honestly, yeah. We talked about all, I think, our financial stuff pretty much in pretty good detail. So, yeah, unless you have any other questions.
Well, I don't think I have too many more questions. I love the fact that you were able to do this all in Southern California while not making huge salaries, you know, with a lot of that. And I think that that's really cool. I mean, you used a couple of advantages and got really creative. But I think it sounds like you were able to amass a lot of wealth and freedom and do so while in really enjoying, I think, one of the most beautiful places on the planet. Maybe more so than most.
Yeah, it's been a wild ride for sure. I got my first gray hair on the first week of our Airbnb, so that's if this is a good
foreshadowing
glimpse into what into the short-term rental world.
Okay, well, we're not done yet. It is now time for the Famous Four. Tien, and this is both of you can answer each question. So Tien, what is your favorite finance book?
Okay, so to be honest, I read a ton of finance specific books, but I read an insane amount of real estate books. So I guess real estate books is probably what's taken it over. But I will say, like, finance related cash flow quadrant, I did like that one. It was just a good perspective as to the mindset that we really need to be in, and switching from, because right now we're employees, so we need to, you know, switch out of that box and really get into the other quadrants. But yeah, so I guess finance, that would be my favorite.
Awesome. I've read a number of those books, and that one's always a good one. What was your biggest money mistake?
No. What is Brandon's favorite finance book, Scott?
I'm sorry, Brandon.
No worries.
My bad. Go ahead, Brandon.
I don't read so well, so it's okay. probably Profit First by Mike Pavlovitz. Basically, I think for me, I like to try to keep a more logical and higher view on projects and stuff. And I feel like with Profit First, it's a good, like, hey, why are you doing this? And make sure you're actually setting money aside to do what you really want to do versus just, if you invest all your money, then you're basically just doing nothing.
All right. What was your biggest money mistake?
Well, mine is probably marrying Brandon. taking on all that debt.
My greatest one is marrying
Tagging on to that. Did you guys talk about money before you got married?
Yeah, we did actually.
Yeah, we did. Yeah, we've money. Always been pretty open about it.
She knew what she was getting into. Don't let her fool you.
Okay.
No, so I think for me, our biggest money mistake is just not starting sooner. So it's kind of twofold, because I feel like the travel really got us the financial independence bug and, like, really made us want to be financially independent. But it was also a year where we lived in Seattle at the time. We could have bought a house in Seattle. We could have bought a house when we lived there and rented it out when we traveled. So just not starting sooner.
Brandon?
Oh, I mean, I think she nailed it. As far as, I think, if not leveraging the ability for, like, all those first-time homebuyer opportunities early on, like, we basically went straight to conventional, thinking that was really the only option. So maybe the education and just the ability to just get after it earlier was our biggest mistake, I would say.
And Brandon always says he wishes we had bought our personal home earlier, because we owned 6 rental units before our home now.
I think that's really powerful reflection there, because yeah, I think that the greatest amount of leverage and the best terms you can get are on those first home purchases. And, like, everyone's fleeing California to buy in Indiana. But at the same time, like, if you guys had bought, and you guys are obviously very successful, so don't take this away with me, but, like, maybe if you guys had bought in Orange County or San Diego with that, there could be a lot more wealth going on right now, in addition to what the great stuff that you've done with that. So I think it's really powerful advice to sit back and be like, yeah, wherever I'm at, using my home, at least at first, as, like, the first couple of years of the journey, can be a huge accelerator on the journey to financial independence. I think that's a really good reflection there.
What is your best piece of advice for people who are just starting out?
Yeah, so I think for me, I have a love affair with budgeting. And so I think you have to be tracking all of your income and your expenses. Like every dollar that comes in should be tracked, and every dollar that goes out should be tracked. And then I really loved, like, we would get so excited for the end of the month because we'd see how much we had saved in the budget. And it's like, oh, it was $491.75. And we would literally go into the student loan portal and put in like $491 and whatever I said, 27 cents. And like just being able to see that pay down, it for me, and I won't speak for Brandon, but for me, that was like so exciting. And that was where we really, like, once we paid off loans, we were like, now what do we do? So I think it's just like, you really need to be tracking everything that comes in and everything that goes out.
Yeah. And they've made a lot of tools now to make it super simple for anybody. Like it originally back in 2013, I created an Excel sheet and was doing it all manually, and which was, I think, very valuable in the sense that we were actually like tracking it and feeling that pain of every expense. But just even if that's too much work using like Mint, we use Mint now. It's just so much easier for people to get an actual idea of what they're spending their money on and where they can save money.
All right. What is your favorite joke to tell at parties?
So the joke I always tell, like trying to make someone laugh or cheer somebody up, is what kind of cheese isn't yours?
I don't know. What?
Nacho cheese.
All right. I love it. I have a cheesy pizza joke, but I won't tell it right now. Brandon, how about you?
So this is for our friends. Their little boy. He's pretty awesome. Me and my buddy, we went through the fire tower together, and so we were trying to open a pressure cooker once, and his little boy says, "How many firefighters does it take to open a pressure cooker?" There's no really answer, but he's taking a stab at us.
It took like an hour to get the pressure cooker
open. Hey.
Oh my gosh.
So more than two is the answer.
Okay. All where right. can people find out more about you?
Yeah. So, honestly, I think email is the best way. So our company's name is 512 Real Estate, which is, a climbing grade or a rock, or like a type of climbing route. And so it's spelled out 512realestate@gmail.com. And then I also, on Instagram, I am True Freedom. So TROO Freedom. And I just put a lot of like our renovation type stuff, a lot of DIY, before and afters of like lately we've just been, I've been showcasing all the stuff that we've been doing in the back house. So I just put a lot of real estate and renovation type stuff on there.
Awesome. We will include those. We will include links to all of that in our show notes, which can be found at biggerpockets.com/moneyshow231. Tien and Brandon.
And can we get pictures of the van there to post on the show notes as well?
Yeah, I'll send those over right now.
I'm very interested to see all of those. Yeah, and those will be at the show notes, like Mindy said, at biggerpockets.com/moneyshow231.
Awesome.
Okay, I can't wait to see those pictures. Tien and Brandon, thank you so much for your time today. We really appreciate you coming on and sharing your story.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thanks, guys.
Okay, we'll talk to you soon.
All right, have a good day.
Take care.
Bye.
All right, that was Tien and Brandon. Scott, I know you liked their story. What did you think?
I love that. I think I'm kind of jealous. I think like, how many sunsets over the Pacific Ocean, you know, have they seen as a result of that? Right, like
18 months worth.
Yeah, are you willing to do that? I don't know. I don't know if I'd be willing to do that. I don't know, but I am envious of the glorious days they must have had for years and years and years, or for at least 18 months in that journey, and the fact that it's got them so far ahead on their financial journey with that. So I think it's really cool, and I think it's a perspective worth sharing.
Yeah, I am not willing to do that, but I'm excited for the fact that they were able to. And I know that you're not willing to do it, Scott, because you haven't.
Nope. So
jump in a van, Scott. I just don't want to live in a van. I don't like road trips. Mostly because I have two kids.
Yeah, I did house hack for 7 years, and I think I would have been willing to house hack, you know, in a creative situation there. I think the van, I think if you're listening to this and you're in your early 20s or coming out of college, this is a potentially great way to spend a year in your early 20s doing something like this if you want to save up that extra money with that. But yeah, I think it's awesome.
Yeah, I do too. Okay, Scott, should we get out of here?
Let's do it.
From episode 231 of the Bigger Pockets Money Podcast, he is Scott Trench and I am Mindy Jensen saying enjoy the shower, flower. The market is changing, and finding your way can be tricky. Rates shift, headlines whirl, but your goal hasn't changed. You want financial freedom, and the best investors know it's not about timing the market, it's about time in the market. If you're ready to get into real estate investing or take it to the next level, finding an investor-friendly agent is your next step. With the Bigger Pockets Agent Finder, you can find the right agent in minutes. Just head to biggerpockets.com/deals, enter a few details about what and where you want to buy, and boom, instantly matched with an investor-friendly agent who fits the bill. These local market experts can help you navigate the neighborhoods, analyze the numbers, and take action with confidence once and for all. This free resource is only available at biggerpockets.com/deals. Get an agent, get the deal, and get closer to financial freedom at biggerpockets.com/deals. That's biggerpockets.com/deals to find your investor-friendly agent today.
The content of this podcast is for informational purposes only.
Past performance is not indicative of future results, and all host and participant opinions are their own.
Investment in any asset, real estate included, involves risk. Use your best judgment and consult with qualified advisors before investing. Only risk capital you can afford to lose.
Bigger Pockets LLC disclaims all liability for direct, indirect, consequential, or other damages arising from reliance upon information presented in this podcast.